This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, and welcome to Yak Yarns, brought to you by the Canterbury District Health Board Youth Advisory Council.
Yak Yarns is an informative show that aims to educate and bring awareness to all things youth health. You can find us on our Instagram, Facebook and website.
Let us know if you have any questions
or if there's anything you want to know from our friendly health professionals.
We hope you enjoy this episode. It's time to yak about health.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of Yak Yarns. My name is Chelsea and I'm the chairperson of the CDHB Youth Advisory Council.
I'm Dakota, I'm a council member.
And today we are really excited to have Jess Bryan here. So I'll give you a little intro about Jess. Jess is the host of the weekly podcast called That's So Chronic, where she interviews people from all around the world that are living with chronic illnesses, life-changing injuries, and potentially disastrous diagnoses. After being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, or MS, in her final year of drama school and being diagnosed a medical mystery in 2019, Jess was inspired to connect and share stories to spread awareness and hope. Something Jess is really passionate about is being able to remove the stigma around chronic illnesses and disabilities so that others can live their best lives. She also loves to make people laugh and has performed across New Zealand and internationally in a variety of festivals, circus tents, streets and theatres. Is there anything Jess cannot do?
Alrighty, so thanks for joining us. Let's dive right in. Chat about you. Could you tell us anything we missed in the intro?
No, I think you got it all, Chelsea.
Alrighty, so what is MS for people that don't understand?
So MS, or multiple sclerosis, is essentially an autoimmune condition. In the most simplest way, it is that the immune system is attacking and essentially eating the myelin sheath that wraps around the central nervous system. And so what that means is that when the messages are going from the brain to another part of the body, or even your eyes or your arms or your legs, sometimes when those messages are going down those signals, because the immune system has been attacking the casing that wraps around it, sometimes there's a little speed bump or a pothole and the message just doesn't quite reach to that part of the body. So, for example, if I was to pick up a glass of water, maybe there'd be a little speed bump so my hand would miss the glass of water, or it would take a couple of tries just to get that to operate. But that's probably, yeah, essentially MS in a nutshell.
That's a good explanation.
Very in depth.
Yeah, I thought it was great. So would you be able to tell us a little bit more about your journey to getting diagnosed with MS and kind of how that impacted you at your time in your life?
Yeah, so I got diagnosed when I was 21 and I was studying at CPIT, or ARA as it is now. I was at NASDA, the National Academy of Singing and Dramatic Art.
Yep.
Always love to drop that in. I was at the Academy.
Oh, there you go.
But I was studying musical theatre. So we were doing acting, singing and dance classes, as well as theatre studies. Like, ooh, our one essay a year, the rest was practical.
Sounds fun.
So I was doing that degree. I was in my third year. I was just about to finish. And we were working towards our final musical, which was Spring Awakening at the Court Theatre. And it was so exciting. And then all of a sudden, what happened for me was that I was in a singing lesson and I suddenly lost a lot of vision in my right eye. It was really blurry and grey and I didn't really know what was going on. And I started crying, which wasn't an uncommon occurrence at drama school. I did cry quite a lot. It was quite intense. But my singing teacher, Ange, she was like, "Why are you crying? You know, this is a little bit, you know, I know you cry, but this is kind of weird." And so I just said, "Oh, Ange, I can't see out of one of my eyes." And so she was like, "I think we need to just call it a day and you need to go and see an optician." So I drove myself to to the optician, which in hindsight maybe wasn't my best move. But I went, I wear glasses anyway, so I went to my optician at Specsavers. Should have gone to Specsavers. And
shameless plug.
Yeah. And they said, it was a Friday, so they were like, well, maybe just see what happens over the weekend, and then we'll, it could either be a migraine or it could be something a little bit more sinister. So let's see what happens over the weekend. And then the weekend rolled around, and I think if I look back, it was definitely fatigue. Then I was just exhausted and I couldn't really get out of bed, and my vision was still not improving. And so on Monday I gave them a call, said it's not getting better, so I got referred to an ophthalmologist. And it was there, when I saw an ophthalmologist, that they were able to diagnose that I had optic neuritis, and that is one of the byproducts, I guess, of MS. And so he said, you've got optic neuritis, and there's only two reasons why you might have it. You could have eye flu or you have MS. So we need to get an MRI, see what's happening. And so I'm still, you know, at drama school, I'm still doing assessments, and I'm waiting for MRI results. And sort of all of that was happening while I was finishing up my degree. So everything just took a real, like, it just changed in an instant, and my priorities changed. Like, for example, I remember waiting for MRI results. And, you know, back then, I wasn't an MRI pro. It was my first one ever. I didn't even know how you got the results. I didn't know if they rang you and told you if you had to go in, or, like, well, you get a letter. Like, I really had no idea. But I had my phone, and I was doing an assessment at the time, and it was in front of the whole school. And I remember giving my phone to my friend, and I was like, if this rings, you have to stop the performance. The side note, the performance was me and my friend Josh performing Bop to the Top from High School Musical 2. It was a very serious degree.
I love High School Musical. That is so good.
Amazing.
And so I was performing that, and my friend was like, what? I can't stop the show, because, you know, that's not what you do, right? And I was like, no. And in that moment I realised, like, actually, I know that my health is really important now, and it's more important, my MRI results, than my assessment at this drama school. Like, actually, what does that even mean? So sort of all my priorities changed, and it was just a really hectic time. And only at 21 as well.
Yeah, that's full on. Yeah. The final year of degree is always really, like, busy anyways. And then to add that on top of it is massive.
Thanks. Now I've got that to look forward to.
Are you nearly at the end of your degree?
No, I'm starting a new one next week.
Oh, nice.
Awesome. So our health system is tricky, as most of us would know.
Mm-hmm.
What's your experience been in the health system? How did you navigate it when you got your diagnosis, treatments, all that?
Yeah, like I said before, it's really hard, because you have no idea what is actually happening. And a lot of the people that you're seeing, like your specialists or the technicians or your doctors, like, they know the health system. And so for them, perhaps it wasn't, like, explained to me, the process of going about these things or how it would happen. And I think quite early on into my diagnosis, I realised the difference between public and private care as well. Like, I didn't really have any sort of experience in that, but because with being referred to an ophthalmologist, they were like, yeah, this is really urgent, we're going to push it through to an ophthalmologist. And then I get a phone call that, oh, we're going to see you in 2 Thursdays time. And I'm thinking, but I can't see out of one of my eyes. What do you mean it's going to take 2 weeks? I just got told that it was urgent. And so during that time, I rang my mum, and she rang her optician and was like, my daughter's 21 and she, you know, has this thing going on, and they said they'll see her in 2 weeks' time. Like, is that what we should be doing? Like, we need some advice. And her optician said, oh, leave it with me, I'll see what I can do. And so he, you know, I didn't realise this at the time, but, you know, he rang St. George's. So that's actually, that's private. So he must have rang them and said, there's this, you know, 21-year-old and she can't see out of one of her eyes, what can we do? And they said, oh, we'll see her at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. And then it was like, wait, now I can be seen tomorrow. But then my 21-year-old brain was like, oh, it's because my mum and dad are going to be able to pay for this. So how lucky am I, you know? And then the whole thing sped up. So, yeah, I think the health system can be incredibly difficult. There's no, Like, there's no instruction manual when you get diagnosed with anything. You just sort of have to learn on the fly and pay attention and notice all of the little things and all the little loopholes where you might be able to squeeze in.
Yeah. Yep. They are there. You just have to find them.
They are the most amazing thing when it comes to healthcare.
Yeah, it's the loopholes. Wow, and at like 21 is just massive, and like any health diagnosis at such like a young age, and this kind of like, you know, even 12 to 24 year old kind of like gap is huge to have a health condition getting diagnosed. What do you wish you knew when you were younger and dealing with these health issues now? If you were to like look back, what did you wish you knew?
If I look back to Jess, who's 21 and who's just being diagnosed, I think I wish that I could have had, you know, future Jess come back and say, I promise you're not alone. Like, there are other people. It's just maybe not the people that are in your periphery right now, like, that are in your world. You are the only one. You know, I was the only one in my class going through something like this at this time. But actually, with hindsight, I just did an interview for That's So Chronic with someone who was the year above me at drama school, and they had EDS through the whole degree, and I had no idea because we weren't really, like, talking about those things back then. So I think I would just love to know that, you know, you're not alone and that you will find your people and that you are stronger than you think you are. You are going to find the strength within you, and it is there. I promise. I think that's what I would have loved to have heard.
Yeah, that's so true as well. I think when you get that diagnosis, you go, oh my goodness, my world has changed and no one around me has this. And you think that's what you, because you just get so like, oh my goodness, like, now what do I do?
Yeah.
Because people might not have talked about it before, and then you're like, I don't know what I'm doing anymore.
Everything does shut down around you when you get your diagnosis for the first time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
And especially, sorry to interrupt, but like, especially when you get diagnosed with something that like 60-year-olds have, 60-year-olds, you know? Like, I remember going to thinking, oh, I just want to go and get a pamphlet, or I just want to connect with some people. I want to go to a support group. And then it's like, oh, old people. Yeah. Sorry, no offense to anyone listening that's 60. You're not old, I promise. But you know, and you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And then everyone goes, oh, you're so young.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Oh, are you okay? You are right. You're too young. You shouldn't have this.
You're like, cool, I do, though. So,
please.
So if someone was listening to this right now and they is a young person and they've just recently been diagnosed with MS, what advice would you have for them that are currently just in that space?
Yeah. I think I would, my like biggest piece of advice would be to try and seek connection. Like, try and connect with somebody who's also living with MS. You can reach out to me. You know, like, my DM's always open. I think just being able to chat to somebody who understands. When I got diagnosed, when I got diagnosed, there had been someone in my world, I guess, that also had MS, and I didn't know them really, but they'd just come back to New Zealand, and so they were also a performer, and I was able to connect with them, and just going out for coffee with them was just such a game changer. And just knowing, like, oh, they're okay, you know, they've been diagnosed for a few years and they're still performing, or they're still doing what they love, that was amazing. So I would definitely say try and find a connection somewhere with somebody around, you know, a similar age, or another young person, or a young adult, I guess, you know. Just to try and connect. And also, if the person that's just been, if you've just been diagnosed and you have a good relationship with your parents, I know that it was hard for my parents too, and that sometimes we couldn't be the people that we needed for one another. And so definitely allowing like your parents to find their people as well, and chat to other mums that might have kids that have MS, or definitely just knowing that, like, you know, there's help in all the different areas. You don't have to take all of this on as well.
That's such good advice.
Great advice. And I will say, it does help having someone who's interested in the same things as you, like, as you said, in your world.
Yeah.
With the same sort of condition, it does help a lot.
Yeah.
So it mentions that you were a medical mystery. Would you be willing to talk about how that impacted not only your diagnosis, but your world around you as well?
Yeah, so that medical mystery thing started in September 2019. So with my MS, I started on a treatment called Tysabri or natalizumab. It was a 4-weekly infusion at the hospital. And I've sort of moved around, so I was getting that full-time at the Auckland Hospital. And then I started pushing it back to 6 weeks, occasionally 8 weeks when I was performing on the other side of the world, so I wouldn't have to come back to Auckland too often. So I was getting that treatment, and one of the things when you're on that treatment is you need a 12-monthly MRI just to check what's going on. They also like to just see if your MS is progressing, just to check that the drug is working, because it's, like, really expensive. So if it's not working, then maybe they need to find something else for you. And so I was getting a routine MRI, and it was a little bit, like, later in the journey, so it probably was, like, 15 months or whatever. And I went and got my MRI, and the results came back. And I found out that there was a random lesion on my brain that they didn't know what it was. And it looked exactly like a brain disease called PML. I won't even begin to try to pronounce the proper name for it. It's a lot.
Medical names are so hard.
Yeah. To find. And usually I can just attack them with confidence, but not this one. It's a lot. So, yeah, and that's like a really, you know, if you get diagnosed with PML, it's not the best prognosis, and so they were quite concerned about that. And then I just, what did I do? I got 3 lumbar punctures in 3 months. I got MRIs every 4 weeks, and I think I've had about 10 or 11 MRIs during this brain drama time. So it lasted quite a long time, and they were able to rule out PML, so the lumbar puncture didn't show any of that, so that was fantastic. But they still just have no idea what that lesion is. And so that was September 2019. So what are we now? 2019, 2020, 2021.
Gosh. February
2022. Yeah, 2 years and a few months. And they still don't know what it is. But the urgency has died down because it actually started shrinking a little bit, which is amazing, and fading. Because when you get an MRI with the contrast and it's really bright, it kind of shows that it's quite active. So it was starting to fade, it's starting to shrink a little bit. But yeah, they just have absolutely no idea what it is, and there is no plan to find out what it is.
Wow.
We just monitor it now and see, hopefully it doesn't grow.
Kind of just sitting in the background.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's possible that I've just created a whole new type of MS lesion that they don't know, like, they've never seen it before.
Sorry, the Jess lesion.
Yeah, I was like to my neurologist, I'm getting a Wikipedia page, right? Like, this is like being named after me.
Hell yeah.
Gosh, that's, wow. Just a quick question, like, you were just talking about having so many MRIs, and like being in a head MRI, for people that don't know, you've got to be in this like cage, and then they put like a mirror and you look out the back. How do you cope with so many? I had to have one last year, and oh my goodness, although it was in like private, I was at St. George's, and like they had like, you know, a mirror, and you'd watch this like nature documentary in the background. Yeah. But gosh, it's full on. Like, how do you cope being in so many all the time? I know that, like, you have to because of your diagnosis and monitoring it, but I can't like comprehend having to do so many, because it stressed me out during one.
I was thinking about this a couple of days ago, actually, because I was talking to a friend who also gets MRIs regularly, and, you know, they were saying how difficult they find it. And my friend wears an eye mask, so they actually can't see anything. Oh, because you know how when you're looking at that mirror and you can see out of the machine, but if you, like, the mirror is not like the whole thing that you can see. So you can see on the outside, like, that you're still in this machine. And so even that was like too much for them to just sort of know that they were still like in this helmet thing. But yeah, to be honest, I'm just the worst person for advice with MRIs, because they've never bothered me. I've never felt claustrophobic or anything. I focus on my breathing, which is so naff, but it's true. Like, I just focus on the deep breaths, and I try to just look out of the machine, or I close my eyes. And sometimes you can choose what radio station you listen to. So that can be really good.
Very friendly with that.
Yeah. And I remember there was one time when I was getting one of my MRIs in Auckland, and I became, you know, quite close with the technicians because I was seeing them every month. And when I came in, they'd be like, oh, what radio station do you want? And I think I, like, would choose ZM because my friends were on it or something. And so I was like, oh, I just listen to ZM. And they're like, oh, my God, you're the first person all day we've been listening to, like, country music or something, you know? Like, they were like, oh, thank gosh, she's in now. Like, we can just
They
nice
really music. Love to, like, make you feel special about your music choice. Yeah. It's so good.
Because you forget that they are listening to it too. Yeah. Like, you just think it's just you. And then you're like, actually, they've got to listen to it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so we're just thinking about, like, health conditions and things. We know, like, in our medical world, these treatments, etc., are expanding all the time. We're always learning new things about, you know, getting closer to curing things or to getting better treatments available, mm-hmm. improving people's quality of life. But we also know that we're still really behind. Like, we're still getting these medical mysteries. We're still getting doctors going, I don't know what's wrong. And that's actually okay because we are... not perfect, no one's perfect, but that's really full on because you can feel really alone, you can feel really shamed, you can go, it's all in my head. I know when a doctor turned around to me last year and went, I don't know what's wrong with you, but off you go, have fun. Like, you just go, what do I do?
Like, you do feel like you're making stuff up when they're like, oh, I don't know what that is, how to treat that, or where it's come from. It's very much like, what have I done?
Yeah, you start blaming yourself. But so, because just, you know, you've kind of going through this, or, you know, even for the past few years even, what advice would you have for a young person who may be in a similar situation where they've just had a health professional go, I don't know what's wrong with you, but that's it, like, we can't do anything more?
I wish I had the answers. I don't really know the best way to handle that situation. I'm not sure if I handle it in the best way or if there is the right answer of what works for you. I think something that you could feel, it takes a lot of confidence or energy to start asking questions. But I think if someone had something that I did that I thought worked quite well for me was when they said, well, we don't know what it is. I said, well, who might know? Who could I go to then? Like, what could I do? And during the brain drama, they said, okay, there's a neurologist in Sydney and he might know at the university. And I was like, well, I'll go to Sydney then. Like, we'll make it happen. I love Sydney.
It always seems to be Sydney.
Yeah, and I'm not mad about it because I'm a Sydney girl rather than a Melbourne girl. Yes. So I'm like, yeah, I'll go to Sydney. It'll be brilliant. And so, yeah, I think advice for if this is happening for you is definitely ask the question, see if there is somebody that might know or a second opinion. Oh, about the second opinion though, I did ask, I was like, so is there anybody that could offer a second opinion? And I get the, and because nothing works instantly in our health system, you know, they have to go and talk about it and then they give you the answer. And they rang me back and they were like, a second opinion could be this name. And it's a neurologist who I know works in the office next door to my neurologist. I'm like, I'm pretty sure he's already gone and asked her. Like, what do you mean? I'm in this medical mystery and the person next door hasn't been consulted? Like, I don't think that's a second opinion. I meant like somebody in Invercargill or something, you know? Like
somewhere else.
Very far away.
Someone away from the whole situation.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm pretty sure they've already been consulted. But it was just a miscommunication thing because I think they thought I needed a second opinion because I wasn't able to get the, like, communicate with my neurologist. But it wasn't about that. It was like, because, you know, he's actually retired now, and I love him so much. He was the best person for me and I really understood him. But a lot of young people, especially young women, might have felt that the communication wasn't quite there, perhaps no empathy. But that wasn't why I wanted a second opinion. I didn't want someone to deliver the same information in a nicer way. I wanted someone with more, you know, more experience or more like
different thoughts,
a different opinion. So that was so funny. I was like, oh my God, no, I meant like in, you know, Russia or something. Like,
somewhere
mean
away.
In the same freaking hospital.
Siberia.
Exactly. But yeah, I would just say, like, if this is happening to you, ask questions, try and find out who might know or who another specialist might be that you go and see. And also just write notes, write your own notes. Bring a notebook. You look a bit nerdy, but I promise you, like, you'll thank yourself, because especially if you're going to these appointments alone, maybe you've just moved, to Christchurch or you've just moved somewhere for university and you're having to go to these appointments, just jotting down a few notes so that you can go and tell your mum or you can tell your friends or someone that's in your circle, you've got that information. Because I don't know about you guys, but when I'm in an appointment, it's like information, and then I leave and I'm like, what just happened? I have no idea.
Not only will you thank yourself for that, but your doctors will praise you for actually wanting to learn about it, not just sitting there dumbfounded about it all.
Exactly, and they appreciate you coming with notes as well. You know, they appreciate you wanting to know very specific things. And sometimes, like when I go to see my GP, there's that little note where you can write in what you're going to talk about or what you need to go and talk to them about. I'm not sure if that's for everyone that books an appointment.
I got given one when I went through my neuro thing as well. It's pretty adorable, actually.
Yeah, like you can, when you book the appointment, be like, why are you coming to see us today? And the receptionist does like see it, so obviously don't disclose anything that you don't want the receptionist to read. But I mean, I'm an open book. I'm like, oh, whatever. And, you know, and so there was one day, I have the best GP in all of the land, but there was one day where I wrote in like, I have so much to tell you. And then she booked out the appointment after me because she was like, oh, Jess is going to talk. Like, we're going to need a double appointment here. But that can be really handy too, like just arriving and being like, these are the questions that I need to get out of you today, just so you know, specialist, like this is what I need answers to. So if I tell you straight away that this is what I need to know, maybe your doctor can then organize their time you know, a little bit better, because they know they've got five questions or they know they've got one question that they need to answer. So you know, that can also help them too.
So we know that grand old COVID adds to a whole nother layer of living life with a health condition. How have you found navigating through COVID 1, 2, 3, 4, how many there is now, with your health condition? And do you have any other advice for people going through the same thing?
Yeah, so because of the new MS treatment that I'm on, I changed from Tysabri to a drug called Ocrevus or Ocrelizumab back when the brain drama was happening, just because obviously something was not working if I got a random brain lesion. So I switched treatments, and because of the treatment that I'm now on, essentially it's kind of getting rid of some of my B cells in my immune system. So technically I am immunocompromised, which also wasn't really explained when I went on the treatment, because we weren't living in a pandemic then, you know. So or we were, but we didn't realise how long it was going to go on for.
Before the COVID.
That was like probably the alpha variant or whatever. Now we're at Omicron. So, yeah, it was a bit of a shock to be like, oh, I'm actually immunocompromised. And I think we see Dr. Ashley Bloomfield talk about immunocompromised people and that they needed a third dose of the vaccine. And I was like, oh my God, well, those poor people, like I really, my heart goes out to them. And then I get a text from my doctor being like, you're booked in for your third, you're one of those people. I'm like, wait, that's me? Oh, gosh. And I think that's such a great example of how we hear information and we don't necessarily put like faces to names, like we don't put faces to those numbers. And I made a Facebook status to my friends of just being like, oh, by the way, like I am one of those people that we talk about. Like we're not talking about, you know, it's a spectrum of people, you know. It's also people that are out working these frontline jobs might be immunocompromised, or also people that are having to get long-term care in the community or as an inpatient at the moment. They're also, you know, these immunocompromised people. And so we just, yeah, it's really hard and it can be so scary. And I made a post and I started a conversation about it on That's So Chronic recently. And I got a lot of advice from people, which was cool. And some of those were like, make sure you've got good masks and that you're prepared at home. That's definitely one thing that I've done. I've made my home as COVID friendly as possible. Yep. I've got ice blocks in the freezer if I get a sore throat. Like, I'm ready.
Love it. I'm so it's not like that prepared yet.
And you need to get like hydrolytes so, you know, you can, if you get dehydrated. Good masks, food. Oh my God. Okay. An extra SodaStream bottle. I'm so.
Oh my God. Yes.
I'm that person. Like, I'm like, water's great. Soda water, even better.
Give me water with little bubbles.
And I was like, it's just me and my partner at home. And I was like, if we both get COVID, or if he gets COVID and we have, you know, we both have to isolate and we run out of our SodaStream, like, that is not good. And how would you go in? This is such a tangent, but like, how would you go in? Exchange your SodaStream, because you could have COVID on your SodaStream bottle, right? So that's they're not going to be doing that.
That's a good point.
So I went and bought another one. Mitre 10 had a special on.
Emergency SodaStream.
Yeah. But yeah, just be as prepared as possible should anything happen to you or the people that you live with. And also just try and focus on, you know, if you are immunocompromised and you're having to stay at home, just try and focus on the things that you can do rather than the things that you can't do, because you can still catch up with friends on Zoom, or there are still things that you can do. It just takes a little bit of time to find that good again.
But a lot of people, they don't realise that how lucky we are to have social media within the pandemic day and age. It's very, it's almost been very helpful.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. And ordering your groceries online.
It is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to have a little change up how we do some questions. We're going to do some quick fire questions.
Also, I don't know if I have it in me to do a quick fire answer, though.
That's okay. That's okay. So our first one is, favourite thing to do on a day off?
Okay, my favourite thing on a day off would be, I'm like, I need to talk fast with this quick fire. I would, okay, I love going to the cinema and I love watching documentaries. Yes. So probably me and my boyfriend would go to the cinema, would watch a documentary. I would then go and get some pizza and I'd eat it at the beach.
Nice.
That's my best day off.
Right. Something that makes you laugh.
Scrolling TikTok makes me laugh. And also all of the New Zealand comedians. We have some really amazing stand-up and comedians here. So they always make me laugh.
Shout out Guy Williams.
Yep. Guy Williams, Guy Montgomery, James Roque.
Great ones. Chris Parker. Love Chris Parker.
Hayley Sproul.
Hayley Sproul.
She is
Hayley.
So funny.
So my mum knows her. My mum does marching competitively.
Oh,
and
amazing.
She used to march with her. It was amazing.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, Hayley is just hilarious. And she's on ZM in the mornings now.
I know.
Hi, so Auntie good. Hayley.
Yeah. All right. Favourite movie?
That is such a hard question.
I know.
My favourite movie that I've watched recently, King Richard. About Serena, ooh, Venus, and...
It looked so good.
Richard Williams? Is his name
their
Richard?
Their dad, I think.
The
yeah.
dad, yeah. Oh, my God, it is so good.
Will Smith's dramatic acting.
Will Smith is so good. Okay, you have to go and watch it.
I know, I do. I feel like I haven't
I think
out
it's
that.
Still at the cinema at the moment. It's at Ellis Cinema.
Oh, okay.
Shout out.
What would you consider your biggest strength?
Talking to people. I just talk and talk and talk.
Love it.
Sometimes we need people that talk and talk and talk.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just love meeting people.
Yeah. And finally, what's your favourite song at the moment? Song you love?
A song that I love because it just pumps me up and gets me so, like, you know, when I'm feeling down, I will just 100% dance, sing along. Mm-hmm. It's from a New Zealand artist, ooh, called Jason Parker, and the song is This Is My Year.
All right, This Is My Year is going to play.
I've been lonely, I've been scared, I've been trapped inside my head. Oh, I've been drinking more than my share. Makes it easier looking in the mirror. Your reflection isn't who you thought, and the time is ticking on the clock, but a voice inside is screaming to hold on. Oh, this is my year. I'm saying no to fear. I'm rising up. I'm taking chances again. Ain't got no money, I got no plan. Oh my God, I'm happy again. Found my voice, found my song, and I remembered who I was. This is my year. I've been wasting all of my time being afraid of what I'd find if I stopped to breathe, to unwind. Will I fall apart? Will I be fine? Your reflection isn't who you thought, and the time is ticking on the clock, but a voice inside is screaming to hold on. Oh, this is my year. I'm saying no to fear. I'm rising up. I'm taking chances again. Ain't got no money, I got no plan. Oh my God, I'm happy again. Found
my voice, found my song, and I remembered who I was. This is my year. This is my year. Got a second chance, I got another star. No fear, no fear, no fear. Got a fire boiling up my blood. No fear, no fear, and it's pumping straight into my heart. No fear, no fear, gotta bite the bullet, take my shot.
Welcome back. Love to chat more about your weekly podcast, That's So Chronic. Love the name, by the way.
Yay.
Could you share a little bit more about your exciting podcast and how it all started?
Yeah, it all started during that brain drama time when I was on a bus down to Queenstown and I was like listening to a podcast and I just thought, actually the podcast that I was listening to was Maura Higgins was doing a podcast. She was on Love Island UK.
Mm-hmm.
Love that.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just that. If you're going through something right now, watch a season of Love Island because it'll really just take you out of whatever's going on for you.
Oh, God.
And she was interviewing a person called Chris, and Chris created Copperfeel, a breast cancer foundation in the UK, and she is living with stage 4 breast cancer. She's been living with that diagnosis for, I think it's 12 years now. So she's doing amazing and she's spreading a lot of awareness. And she said a quote in this podcast and she said, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially she said that, you know, she wanted to create a documentary about her life because she realized that for something like a breast cancer diagnosis, you hear stories of people beating it and, you know, completely getting over it, or you hear of people that unfortunately pass away from breast cancer. And you don't really hear of people living with breast cancer. You don't hear about that middle part. And that really inspired me. And I was like, yeah, where are the stories of the people that are living with chronic illnesses or living with disabilities or living with any sort of diagnosis or any sort of injury? Like, where are those stories? And I know that they do exist, you know, they're out there. But I was thinking, where are the New Zealand stories? And where, because I know that there are people around and I want to connect with these people. And so rather selfishly, I was like, well, I'll make that podcast because I want to hear those stories, you know. I want to hear them. I want to interview these people. So, yeah, that's what inspired me to create the podcast. And then I sat on the idea for a while and I researched all the equipment. And it was amazing because it was a distraction from everything that was going on with all of the brain drama. So I really sunk my teeth into that. I started doing some interviews and then COVID happened and I was like, oh, well, every person is releasing a podcast right now.
It really felt like COVID was the age of podcasts.
Yeah. And so I felt a bit like, oh, do I want to release it now? Do I want to release it later? And so I had the idea in September 2019 or around that time. And then I released the first episode in September 2020. And Hayley Sproul was actually the first interview that I released. So that was cool. Yeah. And then it's just gone from strength to strength since then. I'm really excited. It's just so much fun.
So what has been the most interesting kind of things you've learned from people? Because you've interviewed so many people from around the world on this podcast. So what's been some really interesting things you've learned?
I think it's been really interesting for me personally, realising that back when I was first diagnosed, I thought that I really needed to find people that were living with the same condition, but it's actually, there are a lot of similarities with all sorts of chronic illnesses. And so I've realized that I can get a lot out of connecting with someone, even if they don't have MS. Maybe they have endometriosis, or maybe they have fibromyalgia, or just sort of, or they had a, you know, 3 brain surgeries or something. Like, we can all connect on a level where I didn't realise that we were able to. So that's been really cool, realising that everyone sort of has this shared stuff, I guess, and that everybody, nearly every single person that I interview, thinks that they're someone else is worse off. They're like, why am I here? I'm a fraud. I'm like, oh yeah, we all just accept our reality and we all think that we're doing okay because we are, because we're surviving. But yeah, everybody, so many people have said, oh, I feel like I'm a fraud. I don't know why I'm here. And I'm like, you're amazing. you totally need to be here.
You definitely get that sort of fraud syndrome almost when you learn about your health condition and someone else's as well.
Well, and I think it's that toxic positivity thing. Sometimes people say oh, well, at least you don't have this. Mm. And you're like, okay, but it's still pretty average when I do have. But.
It may be average, but it's affecting me.
Yeah.
So running such a successful, engaging podcast has meant that you would have quite a large following on social media. We know social media world is a tricky place to navigate. What would your suggestions be on young people that can stay safe online?
Oh, it is a tricky one. I think the best tip would be if you're sharing your life on social media, just share what you feel comfortable sharing. It can be really vulnerable when you share things, especially about what might be happening for you with your health. So that can be really vulnerable, and just share what you feel comfortable sharing, and perhaps share when you feel comfortable enough to have a conversation. Because I know, if anyone's on TikTok, it's like your comments section can just blow up, and it's people that you don't even know. And so maybe just share when you're ready to be able to discuss what's going on.
It can be a very, very toxic comment section sometimes too.
Yeah, definitely. And so I think if you're on social media, I also work in the social media field. So I just love it. I just love social media. It's my happy place. And I'm really lucky that I'm really fortunate that I've developed a relationship with it so that it is a safe and a nice place for me to be. So I would definitely recommend working out your relationship with social media. And then if you're on social media because you love to create, that's why I'm on there. I love taking photos. I love creating videos. I love sharing that sort of content. I would say just create what you want to create and don't just create content for content's sake. Because sometimes we can just be like, oh, we need to be pushing out content. We need to be creating this. We need to be posting about this. It's like, but if your heart's not in it, your followers can see through that. So really just share what you feel passionate
about. They can tell if it's very much forced or exactly. If it's something you've planned for ages as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Good advice. Because I'm obsessed with Jess's podcast. So I was so I'm a fan. Oh, I'm so chronic. And I love hearing about other people's health experiences because, again, it's that shared humanity that we're all going through something, the similar parts of anyone's health condition experience that you can all relate to, especially with a health system. We know it's tricky to navigate. We all can relate to that it's tricky to navigate, things like that. But also an exciting news, when I was recently listening to one of your episodes, you're going to uni here in Canterbury, which is so exciting. I'm excited for you. How are you feeling about starting uni?
Oh my goodness, I'm so nervous, but I'm so excited because I haven't done uni before. I've done drama school, so it was completely different. I wrote one essay a year. Now I'm going to have to write a bajillion essays. So I'm nervous, but I'm really excited.
So what are you studying, just so everyone knows?
I'm going to do a Bachelor of Health Sciences, majoring in public health and minor in media and comms.
Exciting.
Yeah. Fun.
Do you have any tips for people who might be starting uni that are living with a health condition? Because it's kind of a weird time to be starting uni. We don't know what's happening with COVID here, whether we're going to go online or whether we're in person, and you've got a health condition at the same time. So, do you have any tips? Or just, you're going through it currently. So
I think you should be the one giving me some tips. I'm not too sure. I think I'm going to UC, and so it sounds as though they have great policies and systems in place. Make sure you read the emails so that you can be all over what's going to happen should we get an Omicron outbreak on campus or in Ōtautahi. And so, yeah, I think just try and keep on top of those emails. Keep reading the information and be as prepared as possible. But, yeah, if anyone has any tips, please let me know because I don't really know anything. Writing notes,
Yeah, no.
What kind of textbooks I need? I didn't even know I needed a textbook.
Textbooks, I would not go buy them brand new.
Because, I didn't. Yeah. Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah, Facebook Marketplace is also a Facebook group for UC that sells.
I've just
got on that one.
Yep.
But also you don't. Like, if we're going to be dead honest, you don't really use textbooks all that much. So if you're going to use textbooks, you might just, like, get them from the library and borrow them for, like, a month.
I need to start taking notes.
Literally, don't stress yourself, because I bought all the textbooks for the first, like, few years of my degrees. I didn't use a single one. I think I maybe used some in my, like, graduate diploma for psych, but that was it.
Turned one page.
So just that. And notes is, like, up to you, I guess, because, like, sometimes people find it easier to type away because that's something they do, whereas others can actually enjoy writing it down because that's a way for them to process, which is, like, how I work.
I've had people, like, say they record the teachers speaking so they can have it audially.
Yeah, and what's even more exciting, actually, I think, which is a good development out of COVID, is that UC are now recording every single lecture so that you can go back if you missed anything and
which
listen to
it.
Which
is so great.
Because it never used to be back in the day. You just had to turn up to class or you kind of missed out and that was it. Yeah. So.
And you can speed up your lecturer.
Oh, yeah.
That is a game changer.
That is a blessing.
Yeah.
So speaking of COVID and uni put together, if we took both of those out of the stress and out of the way, just living with a health condition takes a toll on your mental well-being. What helps you stay strong mentally when you're struggling with your physical health?
It's an ever evolving and changing process. I think for me personally, I really enjoy yoga. I don't do like intense vinyasa yoga. I really love yin yoga. So taking the opportunity and the time to just chill out and have some rest time for a bit, I really think that helps with my mental health. Also, just finding the things that you do purely for you. And that's, for me, I love being in nature. I love going to the beach. I love taking photos. And so if I'm in a bit of a slump, I find that getting out of my house, which I know can be hard with COVID, but definitely getting out into nature and like finding some things to take photos of or to create some videos or just being able to be creative is something that really helps me. And I think with being diagnosed, that was something that I was worried I wouldn't be able to continue to do. But even if I'm not performing as much as I used to, or if I have gone down a completely different path because I was diagnosed with MS, I didn't really want to be in musicals anymore. And with my treatment, it was going to possibly be difficult to commit to like a long-term thing or being on a cruise ship or something like that, you know. So I've changed the game a little bit, but I'm being so fulfilled creatively in so many other aspects of my life. And actually things that didn't really like exist back then. Instagram was only new when I went to drama school. And so, yeah, just being able to like create little videos on Instagram or TikTok is awesome. And that makes me really happy. So, yeah, I think just finding the things that you do for you, like just 100% for you. It might be cooking. It's not cooking for me, but it could be cooking for you. Things like that where you can just, have some of your self time. Yeah. That really helps me. And talking to friends.
Yeah. Good tips. And we know that adolescence and young adult is just a tricky time to navigate, even if we're taking health conditions out of it. It's just a tricky time in your life. There's so much going on. What do you see are some of the big issues that young people are kind of facing right now, which is a really big question. But it's just really interesting.
It is a huge question.
Very loaded question.
Yeah. I know, but I love hearing people's responses to what they think are big issues right now.
I think life is extremely different nowadays than when I was growing up. And I think the biggest thing in that is probably the internet, like being online. And I think something that comes along with that and something that I think is a really big issue for young people these days is that comparison. It's really easy. You can just pull your phone out of your pocket and you can compare your life to somebody else's life that they're putting on online. And I think, you know, comparison, comparison is the thief of joy. And so I do truly believe that. And I don't really have the answers, but I think that's a big problem the way that we can compare ourselves to other people.
Yep.
And if you don't check yourself that you're doing it, like, you can just spiral.
It is
and
like
then it
a
keeps
very
going.
Sickening thing to do as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you can even compare your health condition to other people that are living with the same health condition.
Don't do that. It's not good.
No. Yeah. I think that's a really big problem these days. That's not sure huge. How we're going to fix that, but yeah.
So what have you learned that you'd love to pass on to past Jess?
Oh, trust your gut. It is telling you things. You need to listen to that.
And it's not just telling you that you're hungry either.
No. Although if it is telling you that you're hungry, that's also a sign. Eat some food. I think, that's something that I would like to tell past Jess is just trust your gut. You know what's going on. You know what's best for you. And that one day you are not going to care what anyone thinks of you.
It's like, going to be all right.
Yeah, you're just going to wear whatever you want to wear. And you're going to find your people. You might feel alone, but I promise those people are out there. They're all over the world, and then a pandemic will happen, and you'll be not be able to go and visit them, but it's fine. Mm-hmm. You'll find your people. Yeah.
Bad advice. All right, we're going to finish up with our final question that we ask every guest that comes on Yak Yarns. What is one thing you'd like young people to take away from this conversation today?
Oh, I would like people to take away the fact, because it is a fact, that you are not alone in whatever you're going through, and that there are people out there and connection is really important.
Love that. Right. Great wow. advice. Thank you so much, Jess, for joining us today. It's been so much fun chatting to you. I've been so excited. I've been like messaging Jess for the past few weeks, being like, Jess, please come on.
This episode was just for Chelsea's enjoyment.
And actually, Chelsea was like one of the only people that knew that I was going back to uni. You were like the first person I messaged to be like, I think I want to do this. You're at uni. Should I do this?
Oh, I feel
She's
special.
She's done her research.
I feel special.
So thank you guys so much for having me. It's been so much fun.
Thanks, Jess.
It's been fun for us too.
Yak Yarns, for fun conversations with health professionals about youth health. Get the podcast at plainsfm.org.nz, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can get in touch with the CDHB Youth Advisory Council on the CDHB website, Facebook, Instagram, or you can email them at cdhbyouth@gmail.com.